at your type for my mother, this should be a chus for her. Chayga devora bashmuel yahu. Parsha we're reading is Mishpatim this week, which colloquially is termed the rules of Torah. Those things which govern civil law. The things we should be careful to prevent doing to damage someone else. And everyone points out the reason that Mishpatim, right, which deals with civil and tort law, is put right next to the Aseres HaDibros and the Halachos of a Mizbeach, an altar, is to give an amazing insight into the fundamentals of Yahdus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us a religion in which there is no separation of church and state, of my personal life and my religious life. The rest of the world treats religion as ritual and spirituality. There's a time for spirituality, and there's a time for baseball. And clearly, Western societies have carefully tried to draw laws to differentiate between church and state, and God forbid that issues of religion should interfere with the conduct of a state. In the Torah, we have one set of halachas. All areas of living, from the first moment to the last and beyond, are all intertwined in Kiddush and holiness. And everything derives from Sinai, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're told that if somebody wants to be specifically from pious, act like a chassid, someone who is totally righteous, the thing to be most careful about are the halachas of Nizikin. These laws. Right? Our Beis HaMikdash exists in Yerushalayim. It exists in our shuls. It exists in our schools. It should exist in our homes. While there are different rules in certain situations, but the same level of reverence, the same level of adherence to Hashem should be everywhere. The other thing we've taught is when we're told that these mitzvahs were given on Sinai, we look back again and we see Sinai. We know that Sinai was the smallest of mountains. It wasn't Mount Everest or anything right near it, Mount Hermon, etc. And Sinai was the one mountain, so to speak, who made no claims to a Kadosh Baruch Hu that I deserve anything. I'm a Kleinekite. I'm not going to make what I'm going to go against, you know, Everest and say the Torah should be given on me. And it's because of this level of anivus, this level of humility, that Sinai was chosen. We're told that. We have other allusions to humility from last week's parsha as well. We know specifically that when Yisro came to see Moshe, he came in and it says, and the man said to him, and he greeted him, and he, right, they each were kind to each other, etc. But it never says who was the protagonist, and who reacted. In other words, who was the first one to bestow this level of greeting and warmth to the other? Yisro to Moshe, or Moshe to Yisro? And we're told that it says Ha'ish. Ha'ish refers to Moshe. He was the Ish who went out to save the Jewish man being hit by the Egyptian in Mitzrayim. That's Moshe. For Ha'ish are Moshe Anofniyoid. And that's the paradigm. And I mentioned when I was speaking on Shabbos and giving talking to some people, I said I was reading with Mordechai Kamenetsky, told the story that his brother, Tzvi Kamenetsky, years after Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was nifter, our grandfather, that somebody, Tzvi called up the hotel, and he wanted to talk to someone who was staying there, and he couldn't reach them. And a very, very nice receptionist, excuse me, an African-American woman, said, you know what, let me try to help you. Can I take a message? And he said, sure, would you please tell her that Rabbi Kamenetsky called for whoever it was, Chaim Yankel. And the lady said, Rabbi Kamenetsky? And he said, yes. And he says, you know the name? And she said, of course I know the name. Your grandfather was one of my greatest friends. And he said, oh. He says, could you please explain? She said, sure. She said, for many winters, Rav Yaakov would go down to Florida with my grandmother, and he would give shir, a Daf Yomi shir, in the Caribbean every day. And when he would walk in, the first place he went was to say good morning to the receptionist. He would know her name. He would greet her. He would ask her how she was, how her day was going, and wish her a great morning. And on his way out, he would again stop, say, I hope you have a good remainder of the day, you know, enjoy the sunshine, etc. And she said, incredible. She said, this went on every day. She says, I cannot tell you about what he knew scholarly. They told me he's one of the greatest people in the world. But I will tell you this, he was the greatest human being I ever met in my life. There was no better person in terms of his conduct. That's who Rav Yaakov was. That's who the Rabbeinu Tam was. That's who the Vilna Gaon was. That's the way Moshe, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were. We cannot have a Torah that doesn't have its foundation in Menschlichkeit. And we're told that because of the fact that this is a parsha dealing with the halachos of civil law, and it's right next to Mizbeah, we learn out that the Supreme Court, the Great Beis Din of 71, had to have their office where they paskin in the Beis Hamikdash, in a special place called the Lishkas Hagosis, the chamber of the hewn stone, it's called. It says, any dayan, any judge who rules correctly is considered a partner to a Kodesh Baruch Hu in creating the world. Alternatively, a judge who does the wrong thing deliberately is considered a mashkis, one who destroys the world. After we're taught about a Kodesh Baruch Hu's power, we're taught about the nace of the splitting of the sea, of the incredible revelation at Har Sinai, The Torah talks to us about day-to-day living. They are put on the same level of greatness, right, as the amazing miracles, as the greatest moment in all of history, right? The same way that the revelation proclaimed HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence and sovereignty, so do all the halachas. And, and as Sherman points out, let's look at what does Mishpatim begin with? The law of Jewish bondservants. It doesn't deal with the halachas of Yom Kippur, right? It says, even in a situation where you think we're dealing with those individuals who you would maybe place at the bottom of society, the Torah has elevated them to be spoken up in the same area as the Revelation and the Beis Hamikdash, the Mizbeach. The Ramban says that all of the civil law is an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's last Dibra, don't covet. How do we know what we shouldn't covet? The only way is by respecting the rights of others. That has to be defined. What are someone else's rights? And so the Torah goes on and says, and we're going to teach about avoiding damages to others. And again, Rabbi Sherman writes, quoting the Gemara in Bava Kamma, that devout behavior requires an exactitude, a precise knowledge of the laws of damages and behavior. And again, he says, this is clearly the number one negation of the notion of separating religion, right? Keep religion in the temple. What I do in the kitchen is my business. One who is negligent with someone else's property is as much irreligious as someone who cooks on Shabbos. The Chachamim again and again teach us that the Torah embraces all areas of life, and Kedusha, holiness, is not indivisible. Justice in monetary transactions, relationships, is a prerequisite to Klal Yisrael of national security. Yeshaya tells us, right, Zion will be redeemed through justice, and it's captive through righteousness. The word, the Eileh HaMishpatim, these are the specific rules, is that they've got to be laid out like a Shulchan Aruch, Asher Tasim Lifneihem. You've got to put it before the individuals, like a set table ready for dinner. The Jewish people have got to be taught it in a way that they can come in, they can sit down as if at a dinner, pick up the utensils, the things they need, learn and appreciate what's being taught. It must be, Rashi says, in their fullness, like a table set and ready for a meal. Anytime there is a misunderstanding or a disagreement in halacha, it's got to be brought before the Jewish Dayan and judges, who rule in accordance to the rules of Torah. The biggest Chilul Hashem is to say, no, no, I'm not going to a Beis Din. I'm going to go to the general courts. They say that's a Chilul Hashem. As if we're saying that their way of handling disputes is on a higher level than our base Batei Dinim. I'm going to make a comment aside that unfortunately there are corrupt Batei Dinim. It's a fact. And I've heard oftentimes somebody say, you can't go to that Beis Din because they're biased, etc. To me, that's the greatest Chilul Hashem, that if judges pretend to be tzaddikim, right, and instead have their own agenda, we got a serious problem. We learn about the notion of a Jewish slave, or a Jewish person sold as a slave, either we're told because he became impoverished, sold himself to pay his debts, to help support his family, etc. Or unfortunately, he's someone who made the mistake of getting caught for theft, couldn't make restitution, and is sold by the court. When the Jewish slave is sold, or when an individual Jew is sold, he cannot be sold for a period of longer than 6 years. Automatically, in year seven, he goes free. And there are other conditions. If Yovel happens in between, he goes free. And the Gemara tells us, those who bought an Eved didn't really buy someone subservient, but bought a master. Because the Torah said, notwithstanding that this individual has now been degraded to be sold into slavery, you've got to treat him like a complete mensch. If there's one comforter to sleep in the house, it's his, not yours. If there's one steak to be eaten, it's his, not yours. And so you've got to treat him with the greatest of care for his physical needs. The only thing is that you're allowed to do is if he's already married, and I think he may even have to have children, you're allowed to use him to sire other slaves for you with a umma, excuse me, a goyish slave that you have. And I think a goyish slave who you had also had to have a certain level. They had to go through a quasi-gerus process. They couldn't be, as we say, stamash egetz and eshiksa. So it says in the Chumash, you can give him someone that he will live with and whom he can raise little slaves for the master. Okay? And they remain with the master always. He's used basically as a breeder. But when the time comes and he's to leave his master, he leaves, and he's got to go back to where he was. The other thing we're told is they stay with the master. Yeah. They're part of his slaves that he owns.
The other thing is, it's his inheritance. inheritance.
What?
It's his inheritance. It belongs to him. It belongs to the master.
Yeah. And if the master dies, his kids inherit them. I agree. The other thing, as we're told, is that if the person sold into slavery had a wife and children, the master had a requirement to support the family of his acquired servant, and he had to make sure that they had sustenance. So it was clearly quite a responsibility in taking on someone to be your servant. As it says, right? If he was alone when he came in, he goes out that way. But it says his wife goes out with him, and everybody asks, well, she never came into servitude. And the answer is, oh, when he goes out, the master gets a break. He's no longer responsible to be the breadwinner for the wife and family of the slave. The other thing that happens, they say, is it can happen that the Jewish slave living with his with the slave woman may decide, you know what, I like her better than I do my own wife. And I like these kids better. They're better behaved than the little guys I had at home. The Torah has that possibility. And it says, if that's the case, he can say he's going to stay with the master. And if he does that, first of all, they take him to a doorway, and they drill with a drill on all, it's called AWL, a hole in his ear. And everybody asks, what's this in the ear? And the answer is, there's two answers. One is, you were told that you are a servant of God and God alone. And you now have gone ahead. Your ear, which heard that, right, has allowed your body to become set another master above you. Punish that ear that, while it may have heard the sound, didn't internalize the message.
What happened to the first family that he had before?
I don't know. The Chumash doesn't say. It's not there that I can see. You know, maybe I know what you're saying is, does the master continue have to support them? I don't know. Okay. I'm sure it's somewhere in the Mephorshim, right, and in the Halachas, but I really don't know as to what happens in year 7 if he stays with the original family that this servant has now basically turned his back on. The other thing it says is that, you know why we're going to put a hole in his ear? What didn't the ear hear well and internalize? Leisignoi, right? Or don't steal. Leisignoi, we know in the Aseret HaDibros means kidnap. But there are other, right? You can't be a guzzler. We learned that. He didn't learn that. And if he didn't learn that and internalize it, he stole. And therefore, he was sold as a slave. We're going to turn around and basically, you know, damage the ear. Teach him a lesson, like, hey, guy, you should have learned this lesson.
I think another reason would be that he learned in Har Sinai, Anochi Hashem, I am your Lord, no one else. And if you were to have another Lord and instead of me,
that's what I said.
We're going to teach your ear to remember what you said at High Sinai, that I am the only God of you, and nobody else is supposed to be your God.
You should not have a human. Don't put between I, the Almighty, and yourself a human master. You've got enough people there. Don't put four people between us who you would be subservient to. Right? That's what it says. Yeah.
Okay.
Alrighty. We're going to stop with right here with this inyan because the next one will take more than the amount of time we have before the rabbi starts. Enjoy the day. Stay well.
Me too.
Cold
stay warm.
Stay you warm. Too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.